Welcome to the Lesbo and the Bean universe. Lesbo and the Bean. LATB. Lat B. Where mixed martial arts and the UFC get silly. Big silly. Buckle up and move your tray tables to their upright position. And please, somebody shut that baby up. It's time for Lesbo and the Bean.
Welcome back. 137. We got a breakdown in Brazil. Real quick, how have you been since we last met on our last Ricochet?
I cannot stop thinking about Conor versus Khabib press conference.
And that's going to happen this Thursday, coming up tomorrow. Stay tuned on ESPN streams. If not, they're going to be having it, I believe, on YouTube and or Twitter as well. So be on the lookout. Something crazy is going to happen. Hide your dollies, hide your wife. Because she's going to get crazy.
I heard that the public's not allowed in.
Oh, I did see that as well.
And then
sucks.
I also saw that Connor tweeted out, the public's allowed in. And I'm like, is he just trying to create a tizzy?
I would agree. You have to have the crowd there to hype it up, or else the event is that much less. Some of the biggest factors for Mayweather-McGregor was the workups. Was the crowd being there to be hyped and... I enjoyed it.
Who, regardless of whether you're a Conor lover or hater, homeboy's pound for pound best at the interviews. The interviews? Who's better than Conor? Who is... No one has more taglines than Conor. No one has more one-liners than Conor. Conor's entertaining AF at the press conferences. I enjoy him inside the octagon, but I may be more entertained when he... I want to see what he's going to wear. Like, he is like a Kardashian. What's he going to have on his pinstripe? What's D going to be wearing? Is he going to have the kid there? Is he going to have a little suit on? I'm just curious.
Was I hearing rumors as well that there's another one on the way for that family?
I hate to do this to another woman, but I don't know at all if that's true, but I did see that, you know, the whiskey release.
I did see, that's been everywhere.
And I don't know the name of it. Maybe I'll remember the name, though, if they want to throw some money this way for us to plug it.
Just saying. We know how much Kies is getting paid.
And in the Instagram, D and him have a picture holding the whiskey, and she looks a little bigger than normal D to me. So maybe she is carrying.
I could see it. I do think she's top carrying. I'm saying she's having triplets, one of them being a girl, right now. Bold prediction by the Bean on the next family members. So, other than, before we get into a heavy duty 14-card breakdown coming out of Brazil, is there any other news in the MMA world that we didn't seem to touch on or has broken since the last time we met here at Lesbo and the Bean?
If you buy a bottle of Connor's whiskey, he says you can get into the presser.
I guess. Obviously, we're on our way to the presser because I got some... I don't know how much that whiskey is, actually. Is it going to be like...
Who knows? I just think it's such a crazy... What is going on? He's going to create pandemonium down there.
What do you mean by pandemonium? Like throwing water bottles or like dollies around? What are you talking about? Like monster cans?
Fans on the outside of the outside the door. He's going to create pandemonium downtown New York.
Do you think the Free Conor kid shows up?
Yeah, he'll be there. I feel like he'll be there along with like 200,000 other people.
200,000?
I think it's going to be crazy.
200,000?
It's New York City, so you have all the tourists. You have all the crazy UFC fans around that area, which is like a tri-state area of all these big populations. And then a whole bunch of people that just have nothing else to do but join the crowd. They're putting up a huge screen in front of Madison Square Garden, like the biggest screen ever made.
Which every year I feel like I hear that. If it's not in Texas, it's in New York. Like the biggest TV ever.
The biggest Christmas tree ever.
Exactly.
This is the biggest great white ever caught.
And here is our biggest show of all time here at Lab B. Coming out of Brazil.
Will 229 be our biggest show of all time? Do you think we have to go along with the biggest UFC in quotes fight of all time?
Well, if history serves itself, as we were saying, it's always bigger. So we always have room to grow, it seems like, with that record seemingly being broken in every facet of everything I ever hear. Most meat on a burger you've ever seen.
Most expensive blank.
Exactly, exactly.
Something that I like that Irish people that I've noticed as they talk, and I just like it. They'll say, you know when you like that ting and that other ting? Like, it's almost Jamaican. But they also use the word thing to explain a lot of, like, in America, we give a lot of examples.
Right.
Where a full long story. They're like, if you take that one ting and multiply it by that other ting, you get this ting.
That, to me, sounds like Pidgey from the native Hawaiians, brah. But they always say dekine.
I don't know. I just like the saying.
Irish
people out there, do you guys say thing? Like, if you're trying to explain something, do you say...
King?
No, I just mean thing. Like, even the word thing. Like, yeah. They use that to describe... Like, we use a whole like example.
Like, dekine. The Eighth Island, that's... dekine is everything. It can be that dekine, that dekine, that... And, like, that hat, that dekine, it's that generic-ass brand. It's just everything. That's why they got that backpack. So I've heard on the Pacific
Coast.
Take
this dekine, multiply that dekine, you get this dekine. And that's how they'll just explain,
the ting,
like,
and
us being, like...
So is Ireland the Pidgey of the America, or not the Americas of English?
I don't know. Don't know if we're saying the same ting.
Or dekine. Back to the MMA news. A few other fights falling out. Come together, the biggest one being this weekend, 85ers fighting at 205, but BJ Penn coming out of retirement again to fight Ryan Hall in a match that nobody wants to see, but is, I guess, I mean, if it's on, I'm going to watch it, but we all know here that BJ Penn has had his best years long ago, and it's not for the paycheck because he doesn't need it, but when is the commission going to come in? I know that actually there's legend leagues coming up. De La Hoya is making a legends league with Tito Ortiz Liddell, right?
Yeah.
There's BJ Penn versus Matt Hughes again. Maybe not Matt Hughes, but Frank Trigg. Maybe against Frank Trigg or something like that.
I don't even have anything to say.
We'll have them fight on the De La Hoya card. I'm just saying.
Wow.
Any other fights that have tickled your fancy that have been booked as of late?
I was actually thinking, what if BJ Penn's like, I want to fight. Fights are happening. He's been good to the UFC. So the UFC is like, let's give BJ Penn somebody who can't physically hurt him punching. So let's give him a guy that is just... you know,
was on the ground,
youngest black belt ever, blah 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 blah. And it sucks for BJ's legacy, for fans that don't know BJ like old school. I don't know BJ like you know BJ. BJ Penn. I don't
the same boat.
I don't know.
No, I do.
Any, I don't, I've never seen BJ Penn be good. I've never watched that.
I remember him
UFC.
Being the best of all time.
Yeah, I and don't ever, I've never easy, seen that. I mean, true. I've seen it in old fights, but
sure.
I've never gotten to see him win in my lifetime of UFC.
It's not going
to
happen soon.
If his only chance of winning is on the ground, so here's a fight against a ground guy, and it's hopefully a guy that doesn't, he's not a puncher, so he's not going to hurt, give him brain trauma, or we won't have to watch BJ Penn get physically beat up, but we'll have to watch him get submitted, and I think that's kind of weird for BJ Penn legacy.
I would agree, and that's why I don't want to see it, because it taints so much of those good memories of when he was the champ, and now it's just like, you can't put him now compared to him 7 years ago in the same boat. It's just, it's too much time has passed, and the sport has grown so much. He already tried this once with Yair. I know that that's a striker versus a grappler more, but I would beg to differ and say that Ryan Hall isn't as bad of a striker as people think. He just gets loose in there because he's so comfortable on the ground.
Yeah.
And your BJ Penn, regardless, just can't keep up. It's not the hardest punches he's taken, but it's not about that. It's just that he's kind of lost a step everywhere.
Could BJ Penn knock him out?
Yes, because we have had, supposedly Ryan Hall was out for so long due to concussions because TJ Needham in practice. Do you remember all of that alpha male stuff? So Ryan Hall hasn't fought for a long time as well due to medical issues. And It's intriguing.
I don't know. I don't feel great about it.
I agree. I don't like this fight at all. It doesn't make sense. What does Ryan Hall grow from here? Nothing. He beats BJ Penn. Everyone says, duh. So did Yair. And...
But in the longevity, if he builds a legacy, no one will remember what BJ Penn 10 years from now. It'll just be BJ Penn. Remember when he beat BJ Penn?
Yeah. Like,
I don't know.
I don't know. So, kicking off the breakdown on such a sad note, we're going to go to Brazil. If you watched our Russian show, you know the juice is flowing, and that hasn't stopped all weekend long. You know that these Brazilians like to, they like the Asahi Berry, you know, Asahi with a little bit extra juice in it. And we're going to have Brazil versus the world, 14 bouts. And the first one starts off with the ladies, and we have a debuter coming from the Invicta scene, Renta Souza versus Alex Chambers. Chambers has been the UFC more known fighter. She's had a few fights in here, been 1-2 in her UFC career, only beating, who was the last person Chambers beat? 5-4, the Australian fighter, only beat Caitlin Curran over 3 years ago, and it lost to Paige VanZant. And 9 months ago to Nina Kansev. What we've seen with Chambers is that she just hasn't grown. At 39 years old, we know what we get with her, and it's bad takedowns, limited ground game, no power, and limited striking. She just got that one Curran win, and that's let her have more fights in here. The Invicta Salsa standout is 11-1. Only losing in Invicta via split decision to Angela Hill, who has now been making a new little refreshing run in the UFC. Just all the way around, a better fighter. She's had at-level competition as Chambers because Paige VanZant and Caitlin Curran are Invicta-level fighters. So, I think this is a roll. This is a high favorite. I think a lot of people see this coming at a -675. It's feeding Chambers to Souza. The little alligator is going to eat at 115 pounds, winning her debut. We like to stay away from these first fights of the nights. And at 9,600 on DraftKings for a debut fighter.
First fight of the night, too?
I don't know about that. I'm going to have to be very, very cautious. I'll put her on one or two because we usually stay away from these. But debuting highest ever, the lines, you know how I feel about these lines that are over. We saw it in Russia, Khabibov. With these, Peter Yan with these 700s. Come on, guys. The line is off.
It's
too much.
I don't know where they're getting their information. Like, it's, I wonder where they're pulling it from.
It's probably Tapology. It's probably Fightmetric, legitimately.
Huh.
Or the UFC site itself. But, Saza has beat some level competition. Higher level, I would say, than Chambers at times.
I have Salza submission round two. I don't really have too much to add, so I do think she's going to finish this fight. 9-5, that is a lot.
9-6,
that's just too much.
Too much.
It's too much. You never know what can happen. You never, I mean, is
it's true, especially in the ladies divisions with arm bars that come off of their back.
Yeah. I'm gonna stay away from that fight.
I'm gonna probably end up staying away from
that. I might have it on one or two, but just
but it would be Souza out of the two, right? There's no way it'd be Chambers.
No, I think Chambers is done.
I would agree with that. At 39 years old, she's just, again, fresh meat. Then we go to the welterweights with Ezekiel Seleski versus debuting Luigi Vendonami. The 22-year-old is 7-0 against the 19-5 Zaleski. You know, here at LatB, we're big fans of Zaleski getting high-profile wins against high-level competition. He has been perfect in the UFC against Liam Good, Sean Strickland, somebody who Hear the Bean thinks is very underrated. And in those fights, he also beat Max Griffin. Zaleski broke Strickland, which isn't easy to do, and or Good, who has been a steroid abuser for a long time. So, Zaleski hits with power, has a good ground game. Zaleski's biggest issue that I see is that in the transitions from striking to wrestling, it isn't that good. He doesn't flow too well, but other than that, he has power into the third round with laser right coming right down the middle. Luigi is coming in short notice. This is about 2 weeks, I believe.
Unbelievable. This is going to be a mauling.
Yeah, and this young man has fought such low-level competition. Strickland, Liam Good, Max Griffin, that's UFC dogs in there. Those are guys that can break the top 15.
I agree with you.
Against a 22-year-old.
They're both underrated guys.
Yeah. But I'm going to go with Selesky TKO round number one or two because he throws with heat. Super, super heat. Luigi goes for advantageous positions and just kind of has actually good 5 and 6 punch combinations when he gets going, but I don't think he's ever going to get going. I think Zaleski's going to put the pressure on and get him out of there. He's also a humongous favorite here at, I believe, minus 500 or so. I'll look specifically at that, but I'm going to be looking to play Zaleski wherever I can because this is a short notice, huge mismatch.
I agree with you.
At 9,500 on DraftKings, again, 6,700 for Luigi. How long do you think this up-and-comer goes, this debut fighter?
I don't know. We'll see from him. The dangerous thing is he has nothing to lose.
It's a Lando Venata showing, right?
He has zero to lose. Or
Son.
When we first saw, what was that kid? Tim Elliott against Mighty Mouse. Didn't we see him on short notice originally?
No, he actually was his short notice, but he came back. He won the re-contender series.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, no, he came back in the show. But he, again, had nothing to lose because he was a minus 700. When you're that big of an underdog, like, it's only up. You can lose and look good, which is what we're seeing with a lot of guys. Like Son over the weekend, who ended up doing the same thing.
So he has nothing to lose. So I think Zaleski will have to be tentative for a minute, but he's just going to set up a trap one way or the other, either with leg kicks or punches, and set it up perfectly. So he's going to block, he's going to block, he's going to block, and then he's going to, or he's going to block his body, something. And I think he's going to be able to do it so much quicker because of the level of fight he was training for compared to this kid. I really think it's...
Totally.
Lamb to the slaughter.
Totally. Minus 700 for Zaleski against the plus 550 for Luigi. A lot of people see that. Reflection of the Russia card, we're getting humongous lines going either way so far. Just throwing that out there. Then we go to two longtime veterans.
And reflective of the Russia card, the Asahi Berry is flowing.
Just saying. The commission, also someone you have to watch out for whenever you take a trip down to Latin America. We know they like to help out the Brazilians. Bamurer. Then we have Talis Leites versus Hector Lombard. This is a legends match. We've been talking about him a bit on the show with BJ Penn, and this should be one of those De La Hoya promotions in both of these fighters. We have two retiring fights on this card, and surprisingly enough, it's neither of these fighters. And I can see both of them being like, all right, I'm out. okay. We have Hector Lombard coming in 34-9 off of a 5-fight losing streak in the UFC.
How is that even possible?
Because he's going in there to be highlight reels for people. Dan Henderson's elbow, people's kicks. Hector Lombard, we know what we get with this judoka. Hard to take down, not as much as it used to be. He's got power, but no gas. And throws 1 and 2 punch combinations. He'll give up fights on a decision, if not get finished at this point in his career. Talis Leites is a bit better, but not as athletic as Lombard. Talis Leites tends to be the ground guy, but hasn't really used it. Been at Novo Niao and been using that striking a whole lot more lately. It's whether Lombard lands that knockout shot on Leites. Leites was winning that Hermanson fight that broke his rib last fight and ended up gassing in the second round and having Hermanson with a broken rib finish him. So that's the kind of predicament we're in with both of these fighters. I don't know who to fade more right now. I want to say Lombard because it's been more devastating, but Leites isn't that type of a finisher. It's who's going to gas first, and I don't know who's going to gas first. But I know that the scarier guy supposedly should be Lombard. I'm going to go with Leites, but I'm staying so far away from this fight that you can catch me on the other side or catch me outside because I'm going to be having not a cigarette break. I'm going to watch because someone's going night-night, but I don't know who. Coin flip for me. Who do you have in this fight?
I am going with Leyte's decision because I just think Hector Lombard is going to come out crazy in the first round and then run out of steam, but he could totally knock out Hector. Totally. He was totally beating CB Dalloway, but I got Leyte's decision right now. I'm just stay far, far away from this fight, and I could easily change that to Hector Lombard KO round one.
So,
and I'm still going to stay far away from it.
I would agree with that. I'm going with Leyte's decision as well. I just don't trust that gas tank as much. And then on top of the low output that Hector Lombard has, I see Leyte's just eking out a boring decision, hopefully. But the betting odds actually have -140 favorite Hector Lombard over the underdog.
I think that's how it should be.
+100 Talis Leyte's. So here we have a prime pick for an underdog early on the card.
Nope.
Not a prime pick, not Leyte's.
No. Nope. Nope. I'm going to stay far away from this fight, and I could really flip in an instant. So this should be the 8-8 on DraftKings.
I agree with that. This should so be the 8-8-8-4 for Hector Lombard against 7,800 for Leyte's. This is interesting as far as DraftKings, because if Leyte's wins, I feel like it's a decision and it goes for 40 to 30 points. But if Lombard wins, it's a knockout and it goes for 90 to 100.
Ugh, I'm so changing right now to
what do
Lombard.
You do, what do you do for that on DraftKings?
I'm changing to Lombard right now.
I think the higher floor is Hector Lombard as far as DraftKings. But again, there's other options on this card to be able to make your money. And potentially, with the debut,
I got Lombard decision. He was beating CB Dalloway everywhere. And if you look at the guys who have beat Lombard, they're way higher caliber than the guys that have beat Leyte's at this stage.
I could potentially see that.
I'm going with Lombard decision now. But I'm still staying far, far away.
I would agree with that. Then we go into the flyweight division, 125 pounds. We have debuting off of the Contender Series, Mayra Bueno Silva versus Jillian Roberts, Port St. Lucie zone, Canadian. Roberts came out with a big underdog win over Molly Meatball in a submission. Silva, at 5-0 coming out of Brazil, Sao Paulo, the 27-year-old, comes out with a ground game. She has that Brazilian type of takedown where she doesn't drive through her shots, but if she gets bowled over, she's fine with going on her back and working to a more dominant position. Her striking is 1-2 punches, tucks her head down and moves her head forward, but she's ideally looking to go to the ground. And what I've been seeing from Jillian Roberts, I did overlook Jillian Roberts against Molly Meatball. Molly Meatball is way lower caliber. I think that Silva could even be potentially Meatball as well. But I really liked what I was seeing from Roberts. Her movement got really good in her last fight. Standing-wise, she said she's been working on it. And on the ground, she looked super proficient. I'm going to go with the 5-2 Roberts in a decision here. I don't know if I'm going to play it hard because both of these ladies' output isn't the highest, especially when I see this turn into more of a grappling match dictated by Silva. But once it gets to the ground, I do think that Roberts is still going to potentially have the advantage there. And be the better mixed martial arts fighter all the way around. Again, I got Roberts' decision here. How do you feel this one goes down?
I'm not too far behind you. I got Roberts in submission round three. I just like her ground game a little more. And if you look at the caliber of people, once again, that she's gone up against in her last bunch of fights, they're a lot higher than Silva. Silva has gone against two of the girls on her record that never fought anyone before that fight. That's just a different monster to me. So I'm going to go with American Top Team Education and go with Robertson. Submission round three. I think she figures it out and maybe even earlier than that.
So we have Robertson coming in at 8,300 on DraftKings against 7,900 against the debuting Silva. The slight favorite on the betting lines as of now is actually Silva at a -135 against the -105 Roberts. Another underdog here at Lab B.
I'd be more comfortable picking that underdog.
I would agree with that. I actually feel much more comfortable with that one. Again, not going to get too much exposure on DraftKings, but if there is one way I lean on DraftKings, it's probably going to be that Roberts at 8-3. Also, with the 170-pounders, we go to Ben Saunders versus Sergio Moraes, two other men that could potentially retire at any time, but are not.
Oh my gosh, this is the retirement card.
This is the Legends card that we were hoping for. All we're missing is Vito Belfort,
they don't Chuck Liddell. The UFC don't give a shit. They got their 229 and 230 coming up. They don't give a shit.
They'll just put anything together. But at welterweight, we have Ben Saunders at 22-9 coming in against Sergio Moraes at 13-3. Moraes beating Tim Means in a split decision as of late, compared to Ben Saunders beating, was it Jake Ellenberger as of late? Was that his last fight?
Yeah.
It was. At TKO 3 months ago. But in that fight, Saunders was getting some beams out of his head as well. And I've been trying to fade Saunders a little bit more lately. I'm not proud of that, but I just don't like the punishment he's been able to take ever since we really saw him in Orlando get in that shootout with Joe Bann. I've been really tentative.
And Saunders, then he was like, clip!
Boom. Oh, and then them stick legs just went. He's got those heron legs where, yeah, I'm like, they're going to turn the other way and his knees are going to,
There's Johnny Bone legs.
Hell yeah. Sergio Moraes ends up being the older fighter by a year here, but I think that he's a little less shop-worn. He's more of the jiu-jitsu lifelong practitioner, where Ben Saunders is more of the kickboxer. Even though Saunders has that 10th planet game, uses all of that mission control and those egg beaters and all that super well. He really uses his length well, but Sergio Moraes is top-level Brazilian jiu-jitsu black belt in there as well. Striking-wise, I think it's near even. Saunders is crafty with his kicks up the middle, but Moraes throws really good leg kicks, which I think could affect Saunders a bit more. I'm going to end up going with Moraes on the ground just because I think Saunders might get hurt a little bit and go to the ground to try to save himself. And in that scramble, I just see Moraes being a little bit cleaner. I got submission round number two. Not too comfortable there. Again, both of these guys starting to be on that fade a little bit. I think Moraes has a little more in the gas tank, especially when we're going to Brazil. I'm going to go Moraes submission round two. Who do you got in this one?
I agree. This fight card is sketch city, yeah. I think.
Hell yeah.
Play it lightly. Pepper it just for fun to make it interesting for yourself and save your money for 229, in my opinion, altogether. Or if for whatever reason you have to decide between the two weekends to do something that you don't watch fights, obviously pick this weekend. This is not a bad one to miss.
With that, I would agree. If there's a weekend, if you have to do something, do it this weekend. But I see some lopsided knockouts where we might see another dead body in there. We might see another CB Dalloway in Brazil. I'm just saying, that's the type of lineup we got coming up.
Yeah, and sometimes when they're all fast knockouts, those are the boring cards.
It could be.
You're like,
but if we got Yamasaki in there, we could see a dead body. We could see Ben Saunders. No. Oh, that's horrible. I'm sorry. I don't put that on you, Ben Saunders.
Yeah, you don't want the fighters.
I don't want to put that on you, Ben Saunders. My bad.
And the dead body, he's just saying it like Stand By Me. He doesn't mean dead. He doesn't want anyone dead.
No, of course.
We love the fighters.
Yes. I mean, for like 2 minutes.
It's PC America.
It is. Then we go to the
heavyweights. Wait, I haven't even told
you. You didn't say. I thought you picked.
No, what did I pick?
Moraes?
No, I haven't even said a word about the fight yet.
Well, I'm getting ahead of myself. So, who do you have in this 9,000?
I actually have Saunders submission round three right now. I think he's better on the ground. And I think the deciding factor in this fight is going to be leg kicks and knees from Ben Saunders. I don't know if Sergio Moraes has gone up against a monster like Ben Saunders since Usman. And obviously, Ben Saunders is not as good as Usman. But don't they fight out of the same camp?
I do think they have top team ties, but you know how many top teams there are.
Oh wait, no, Usman's not top team, so they don't fight together.
Oh no, but I think Saunders and Moraes have both shared time at top team. Just throwing that out.
The last fight that Moraes won, Tim Means, and I might be a little bitter because I think I had Tim Means in that fight, but the new Tim Means, for the last at least year and a half, has only been, I know everybody fights for a paycheck, but we say this over and over again, he really is only in there. He has no love for fighting anymore. Like, something's missing in Tim Means' game. So I'm going to go with Saunders here. He still really has drive for it. It can't go to decision.
because you know Sergio will win regardless. So Saunders submission round 3. I think he figures it out with some weird like grab. What's
mission
that one?
Control? Yeah. Where he brings it up over yeah. the top. Oh yeah.
He grabs his own ankle. And
so the big underdog for Lesbo at +185 against the -265 for Marias.
Wow.
That's crazy. A lot of underdogs so far. As we go to the big boys, these guys are going to end up showing out when we have... Is this the vanilla gorilla? How many gorillas do we have in the UFC now? Jeez. But I do think Chase Sherman was one of the original gorillas. Just throwing that out there. It's come up more as of late.
He's the gorilla before Till was the gorilla.
And before T-Wood and who else?
Connor.
Everyone's a freaking gorilla, apparently. Against...
Connor had that tattoo after his like second fight in the UFC, right?
Yes.
That was before Chase Sherman. Right?
I would agree with that. But he's a vanilla gorilla. Which is
a
bit
clever. I think it's the most clever gorilla.
It's a better one. It's definitely the better one. Against,
and he actually looks like a vanilla gorilla.
I would agree with that. That's why it fits him. I like it more than most other ones. But Darren Till, I'm like...
That is the wrong nickname.
It's the wrong nickname for him.
I haven't figured it out. His should be Un.
Until? That's actually pretty dope.
Darren Until.
Yeah, that's actually a really good one. But
Attila the Un.
Okay.
Wah.
The vanilla gorilla coming in against Augusto Sakai, the debuter coming off of the Contender Series a month ago. This guy got a finish against Marcos Jr., not UFC caliber. Chase Sherman, though, has come in and only had 2 wins in the UFC, losing to Justin Willis and, I believe, Justin Ledet, but are losing to Abdurakhimov as well, beating Rashad Coulter and one of the fights of the years, and also beating Damian Grabowski. He's no longer in the UFC. We know what we get with Chase Sherman. A big-ass head to get hit. He takes more hits than any other heavyweight I've ever seen and keeps on trucking. Eats a good leg kick as well. Chase Sherman actually throws a really sloppy leg kick, but it lands a lot more than...
He has weird-looking legs.
Yeah, well, he just kind of flicks it out there, and it's very non-committal, but it adds up. In that Coulter fight, it really added up. In other fights, it really adds up, but a good striker knows to as soon as he throws that bullshit kick with nothing behind it, an overhand right over the top is going to put him down. And I think a lot of people have been starting to counteract those kind of empty punches and kicks that Sherman has. He's more of the tough guy in there for me, Sherman is, than the all well-around fighter, where Sakai saw a little bit more from him. He hasn't had the level of competition, but at 27 years old against a 28-year-old Sherman, I got this in a coin flip. I know that there's a big favorite for Sakai, but I think Sherman can put a good showing in there. I do have Sakai finishing this. I just don't think it's in the first round. I think it goes into the second because Sherman is tough in there. He takes a beating before he gets out of there. I got Sakai round 2, TKO, standing. I think the ref might stop it via cut. Who do you got in this one?
I think Jackson Wienkamp's putting it together lately. They've figured something out. Maybe they cut that dead weight and getting rid of Cowboy.
Oh, ho, ho. Bazinga!
Boom, boom, boom. I don't know what has happened, but all the Jackson Wink guys, they have turned around that percentage. Like, something's clicked on. Maybe it's the rumblings of their boy John Jones getting back in there in November. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is. I think Chase Sherman figures it out. I think they're smart enough to watch this guy. I don't think Sakai has a gas tank at all. He is looking for a heavy knockout, and he carries a lot of extra weight that he shouldn't be carrying. I think Chase Sherman's going to be the faster guy in there and just has a more well-rounded skill set. I think he can wear Sakai out, and I see a ground-and-pound finish in round 3, Chase Sherman.
Wow! Huge underdog for Lesbo. If you're picking any parlays from Lesbo... You better pick them quick. You're going to make a lot of money.
If you end up making tons of money, then send us a note and we'll I think we have a Patreon.
Yeah.
You have to, if you become like, whoa, I just made so much money, I paid all my bills, let me send Lesbo and the Bean a dime. Let me buy Lesbo and the Bean a beer.
There it is. So the, again, +205 underdog for Lesbo against the -285 favorite Sakai, who I have money to be made on this Brazilian card. Then we go to the light heavyweights, where we have a debuting light heavyweight in Luis Henrique, who has been a touted heavyweight here that we talk about a lot, having multiple fights in the UFC, against debuting Ryan Spann, coming off of the Contender Series, being 14-5. Ryan Spann coming in with big credentials, fighting in LFA, being a champion out of there, being a longtime wrestler as well. Luis Henrique always comes in with that Brazilian state champ credentials, but we've seen him out wrestled in the UFC already before.
Mm-hmm.
And he made this move because Henrique made this move from heavyweight down to 205 because he probably got his diet under control, slash his Asahi berries are going to be potentially working on full blast. He was probably one of those 240 guys.
He hasn't fought out of Brazil.
Ever. Luis Henrique was one of those like 240 guys. What I see happening here, and we've seen it before with some of these heavyweights that go down, is that they lose that speed advantage they had at heavyweight because they thought they were fast. But at 205, everybody's fast. So all of a sudden that big advantage goes away, and if the fighting skills aren't there, then you're just a duck in the water because the skill goes up a little bit more. Henrique sits behind his wrestling, and I see Spann being a better wrestler on the ground here. I see Spann landing harder shots. Henrique da Silva doesn't have the best striking as well. Gets his head off the line well, but doesn't really return fire. Pushes you up against a fence, tries to drag you down. And I think Spann can counteract all that, end up on top, and eventually getting a ground and pound TKO. I am going to side with the decision, but I feel like as the week goes on, especially weigh-ins, I'm really tentative of this because Henrique might be one of these guys that doesn't make weight this week. We haven't called it out in a while, and it's been happening a lot.
Watch out. Who's that big-ass mofo second fight of the night that everybody's retiring tonight, so it's so much harder? Tebow. Wait.
Nope.
No.
He's already out.
Let me just scroll down here. Oh, Hector Lombard.
Also a guy who might not make weight. So just, you gotta watch the weigh-ins to be, to adjust those draft
teams. Hector Lombard don't give a shit. He'll miss what, he already plans on missing weight by 10 pounds.
It's a good freaking point.
He doesn't care. It's, he'll come in 10 pounds heavy.
If we're saying these Brazilians are juicing, you think Hector Lombard's gonna be to the tits?
To the tits. Every time.
Maybe I should go Lombard too, because...
Remember how he was... I thought he was beating CB Dolloway before he didn't need to... Sucker punch him.
So, yep, that's exactly what happened too. Interesting.
He doesn't mind losing money here and there. That's why he fights so much. He already plans on it.
So, tentative on that Spann versus Henrique at 8,700 for the debut. Spann against 7,500. Henrique, not going to play that heavy on DraftKings either.
I like Spann. I think he knocks out Henrique.
What?
Henrique is chinny AF. I got round two.
Round number two. For Spann, we're both sided on there. The favorite as of now at a minus
-245. But you know also, you guys, I am anti-Henrique.
Yes.
Anti.
Very anti.
I don't know if I've ever gone with Henrique, so take it for what it is.
Then we go to the 155-pounders. At lightweight, we have a retirement fight in Evan Dunham versus Francisco Trinaldo. And the older fighter is not retiring here. Evan Dunham at 36 is having his last fight in the UFC at 18-7-1, coming off of a loss to, who was that? Alban Mercier via TKO. Francisco Trinaldo is coming in at 22-6. The 40-year-old has been longtime USADA non-victim because he has fought in Europe and Brazil. I don't think he's come to the States much at all. And the few times he has, he lost to, who was it, freaking Paul Felders and like Kevin Lee are the few times I think he's gone out of the country. I may be making that up, but either way. We know what we get with Trinaldo. High level striking, good takedown defense, strong as a chimp. We've talked about it before. He literally looks like a shaved, shaved chimp in there. Against Dunham, who...
Not gorilla.
Not a gorilla. Against Evan Dunham, who's a high-level striker, been coaching Alpha Male for a long time, on the ground, super sneaky. It's just somebody who's been a part of the sport for far too long. He's got a lot of miles on there. So does Trinaldo, but we've just seen Dunham not be able to take the punches or keep up the pace that he used to be legendary for doing. Dunham has a better striking output. He has the not harder strikes, but better strike defense. And with Trinaldo, he's actually a little bit elusive. It's just that when Trinaldo hits you, he puts people down. Has one of the higher knockdown ratings in all of the UFC. If Trinaldo gets you to the ground, he will snatch up a guillotine and just try to rip your head off of your body. Unfortunately for Dunham, I think he goes out with a loss, and I think it's decisive. I think it's in the round two or three. I see ground and pound by dismemberment. We got a chip ripping Evan Dunham's arm off, unfortunately. Round number two for Trinaldo. Who do you have in this fight?
I have Trinaldo, but I have him by decision. I think he's lost some of his KO power, and a lot of his fights are just becoming slow and slow and slow by the end. I know that's how fights tend to go, but his just seem exponentially so. Maybe he's one of the fighters that used to fight out of Brazil, but now never does. So it's more exciting fights from him when he's in Brazil. I got Trinaldo decision, but I also believe it's going to be a decisive decision, and I don't know what the points are for him, or the price.
8,900 on DraftKings against 7,300. That is a little bit steep.
I think he's going to get like 67 points.
At a minus 300 favorite for Trinaldo against the minus two, or plus 240 underdog in Dunham. That's a uphill battle for the retiring fighter. I wish it didn't have to be this way. Why couldn't they offer Evan Dunham a fight? He could win like BJ Penn. Just throwing that out there. Trinaldo just seems like still at 40 years old, a big step up. Weird. And not even a step up, because Dunham has been at the top level for a while. But enough with that one. We're staying in the lightweights. We have Charles Oliveira welcoming back Cristio Gallegos. Gallegos, 15-6, has come back into the UFC after a couple losses. He's had over five fights in the ABC and whatnot to get his, and the RFA to get his record under control a little bit, only having a loss since then to Shamil Nikaev, but getting a win as of late in a decision against Batista. I don't know who the hell those guys are. Charles Oliveira.
If you don't know him, don't need to read him.
Yeah, good point.
Just say loss.
Charles Oliveira ended up getting a win not long ago against Clay Guida, submission. Oliveira, you know how we feel here. Unfortunately for him, he's a quitter. He's got great Muay Thai, great knees, great clinch on the ground, off of his back, and on top. He will wrap you up, get calf slicers, arm slicers, back slicers, ankle hooks, all that shit. And it's just whether Oliveira shows up or not. He's tapped due to esophagus tear. He's tapped due to TKO ground and pound standing strikes. Oliveira just some days doesn't show up, but being in Brazil, I think that's going to help give him a little bit of boost. He's been at American Top Team for a while, though. Oliveira, I know, travels. Gallego's biggest deficiency is the ground. Striking, he has a bit of power. His gas tank's okay, but a rudimentary striker. I think Oliveira wins that checkmark as well. But the huge discrepancies on the ground. Gallegos doesn't have good takedown defense or submission defense for that matter. So it's only a matter of time till Oliveira, who's now focusing back on his ground game, hopefully. I got the heavy favorite, but Oliveira is that type of fighter that will shit in the bed. Just throwing that out there. He's the guy who's 500 and all of a sudden goes out there and loses via armbar. And you're like, how did that happen?
If he loses ever, in my opinion, by a submission, it's really because he got really hurt by a punch and he just gives up his back.
Gives it up. Yeah, 100%.
I have Oliveira submission round two. If he fucks me this time, I will never pick him again.
I feel like I say that all the time with him. All the time. It happens so much more where you're just like, really? That guy?
Yeah, I don't even have anything else to add.
Well, what about for 9,400?
Nope.
Are you willing to put on,
maybe
right?
Maybe on a speckled.
Yeah, exactly. One or two cards, but 6,800 for Diego, so I'm not going to put anywhere. But 9,400, just not trustworthy enough. I could see Oliveira being on that winning card, but I could also see him, again, shitting in the bed for super expensive on the night. Then we get into the main card. It is a six-card main card event. We're going to go with the 115 ladies, where we have Ronda Marcos debuting against Marina Rodriguez, who is 11-0, coming out of Brazil. this contender series fighter ended up winning via TKO strikes over a month ago. Ronda Marcos has come off of her own show being 8-6, winning and losing one for her entire career, pretty much. She has win one, lose one, almost a 500
She's a Christmas
fighter.
Tree.
She is a Christmas tree. Ronda Marcos.
Christmas lights.
Exactly.
Yeah, you know what I mean.
You know what I'm saying. Ronda Marcos likes to get it done grappling in there. Striking hasn't evolved at 33 years old against a 31-year-old. The best win for Ronda Marcos has been Carla Esparza. She last lost to Nina Asnerov, which we've been telling you here at Lab B. People are sleeping on Asnerov.
On Nina.
We called that Marcos loss as well because he's sleeping on Nina. So if the trends tell me anything, it's Marcos is going to duck under those strikes to get this to the ground. And on the ground, Marcos doesn't have to get the finish. She's not that good of a submission artist. When she gets to the ground, she's more of a position over submission. We've seen that time and time again. I think it's going to be a boring decision. This goes over the 2.5. That's probably the best bet to go. But I got Marcos easily winning a 30-27 in this bout. I'm going to probably end up staying away because I don't see either fighter scoring a lot on DraftKings.
I think Marcos' decision as well, and I think it's handedly. I think she's the better fighter everywhere. If she stays on course, it's time for her to win one. Going to decision with Nina, in my opinion, is not a...
horrible, right?
Horrible.
I agree with that.
Loss, so...
I agree with that. And here at Lappy, we're going with the slight favorite at minus 145 against the plus 105 debuter. But on DraftKings, Rodriguez is actually the favorite at 8,200 against 8,000 Marcos. Guess who's coming on a few of my lineups? Do you think that Rodriguez has a potential to finish here? Or do you think Marcos is... Marcos shows her toughness.
I think Marcos has a good chin.
I would agree with that. So, liking that pick. Then we go to Henan Barão versus Andre, debuting Enwell. A lot of debuting fighters in Brazil here. Enwell...
Against a lot of old men.
Against a guy who should be retiring, but is not.
I think Barão doesn't need to retire. Even though his loss record, it's against monsters.
It is against
every single person he's lost to is against. And I think they thought they were feeding Barão a win with Brian Kelleher.
Yeah.
But we think Brian Kelleher is a sleeper good guy in the division. And that was a banger fight.
That was a good fight. And actually, Henan Barão outstruck.
I thought he looked better in the beginning of the fight.
And that Kelleher fight, but Kelleher hurt him by far.
Yeah,
he
was a lot. He survived, though.
Yep.
So it was, he survived being really injured, I thought.
I would agree with that. But, yeah, we watched that live, and Barão was hanging on by the skin of his teeth at the end of that third round. So, Enwell, though, coming in here from the CSS scene, he is actually 13-4, and... in that Kelleher bandwagon, a fighter, gritty fighter, good skills all the way around, not tons of power, jumps on submissions well, good gas tank. It's been in there with some good competition, not the best, not UFC level, but guys that are also knocking on the door of the UFC. Ewell has been in there definitely looking good. I did like what I saw in the tape. Okay, takedown defense. Mr. Highlight does throw some flashy knees in there every once in a while. But against Henan Barão, a lot of that flash stuff doesn't work. You need to go to basics. Basics beat Henan Barão with a good gas tank. And he's vulnerable against gritty, grinding style fighters right now. And Ewell can put that type of game plan together very, very well. The thing where I got to worry about here in Brazil is the Brazilian judges, because Henan Barão is a legend. Being so undefeated, being a former champion, I do feel like the UFC was kind of like, all right, we'll give you somebody who you can beat, but this is a coin flip for all intents and purposes, and I think it should be a minus 115 by closing lines. I'm going to go with Barão, but I think it's the intangibles that win him this fight more than anything. I think that he could potentially lose this fight and still win a 29-28 split decision. I am going to go decision Barão here, but I'm going to probably stay away from this. I like Ewell's shot. I think it's a dog or pass position if you're betting it, specifically money-wise. I think you got a live dog here. Again, it's those outside factors of Brazil and commission that are making my biggest changes here.
I have Barão decision. I think he does it kind of handedly. It's Brazil, and it's just set up that way. And I don't know if we ever... I think we even said his last fight. I don't think we see him fight out of Brazil anymore. And then did we against, or did, was
it was Mike? In Orlando. We saw him against Kelleher. Yeah, he hasn't fought since.
Yeah. I liked what I saw from Barao in Orlando, even though we had, I think we had Kelleher as an underdog on that, though.
Yeah, we did. That was our big, boom. That was our Leslie split. That was our boom.
Hashtag boom.
Oh, yeah. People call this crazy. Call him crazy.
So I think losing to Boom isn't a bad thing to me. I think Boom's kind of a little sleeper. Yep. I think Barao's still a little bit in there with way too much experience. This will just be experience for Uwell going forward, and I think he'll learn a lot from the fight.
Good point.
I still have Barao decision.
Then we go to the second retiring fighter of the night officially. We have Antonio Rodrigo Nogueira coming in against Sam Alvey at 205 pounds. Nogueira, been a long time veteran, definitely a legend of the sport, hasn't fought in over a year, 9 months, losing to Ryan Bader via TKO. Comes in with all sorts of grappling credentials, Nogueira fighting systems in there being, or Nogueira Jiu-Jitsu being a prevalent guy in there, coming with Elite Boxing, his brother and him being twins, but having that Elite Boxing, that's where Nogueira has tended to go in all of his fights. He hasn't shot on his last five fighters in the last 5 years. He hasn't thrown a double leg or shot or up against a cage at all. Nogueira strictly boxed in the UFC now. I don't know if it's that age at 42 years old where he just can't bend right or get any penetration, but if Nogueira wants to get you to the ground, he's going to try to drag you down or push you up against the fence. And if we've seen anything, Sam Alvey has elite takedown defense. If Sam Alvey can keep you off of the ground, he has that counter-striking power that will put you down. Sam Alvey is a perennial underdog who can put a game plan together. You know we love his wife. You know we love Smiling Sam Hare. And he is the best call-out guy in the game, because he picks the right shots. He's picking fights that he can win, and this is another fight he can easily win. He's not picking an up-and-coming dog. He's picking somebody who probably should have retired 3 years ago already, for all accounts. I got Sam Alvey, decided favorite. A lot of people see what I see. It doesn't matter. Nogueira can't get this to where he needs to, which is the ground, and it's only a matter of time till Alvey comes in with that left straight or hook. It's got tons of power. Same with that left uppercut. Actually, I see an uppercut for Sam Alvey in the second round, maybe even the first. I think there's not much to say. It's just a fade train on Nogueira's last fight in Brazil.
I agree. I think first or second round knockout Sam Alvey going up to the 205 from 185. He's just going to be that much faster for the division, and then that much faster for poor Nogueira. So I think he gonna put him night-night.
Night-night.
And then him and his wife are gonna go eat a steak and make a little ginger baby.
More ginger babies. They got a couple already. So, at 9,200 against 7,000 for Nogueira, the minus 300 favorite Sam Alvey, I'm gonna probably put him everywhere. Like, I don't see this not being a finish for Sam Alvey.
I like Smiling Sam.
How much do you like him on DraftKings for 9-2?
Most of my cards, but probably at, like, not one of my cards. Like, there'll be one without him on it.
Oh, yes. So 90%.
Just in case.
90% of your cards.
But Nogueira, nowhere.
100% agree on that.
Nogueira.
I like it. I see what you did there. Then we go to the welterweights in the co-main event of the night. The second Oliveira brother coming in, Brazilian-born cowboy, against Carlo Pedrosoli, 11-1. Pedrosoli has had one fight in the UFC to Brad Scott, and he won via the split decision on short notice against Cowboy Oliveira, who's 19-5, carved out a good niche in the fight game as being all sorts of live action. You know what you're getting with Charles Oliveira. He ain't making weight. He's kicking you in the dick. He's poking you in the eyes. He's taking a break. He's winning this bout no matter what. Charles Oliveira goes there in there and bangs. And if there's the whole card you have to miss, you want to watch these two last bouts because they're going to be heaters. Pedrosoli has an okay chin, but I just see him not being able to get this to the ground where he needs to be able to win the fight. Oliveira has good takedown defense, and his Muay Thai is lethal. Has hard body shots, which I do think Pedrosoli is a bit open for. The striking is the biggest advantage for Oliveira, and I think he could keep it there. I got a TKO round number 2 or 3, probably leaning in that too, just because we know Oliveira does gas, but it's because he has one of the higher outputs.
I agree. He's so explosive for the whole fight. He'll still throw a flying knee at the end of round two.
Yep.
He's crazy explosive. I think he has a better ground game, better stand-up, more explosive, better knees, better hands. I think he's better everywhere, and I agree with you. I think he takes over by round one, and then in round two, he finishes the fight. I also think you put the other Oliveira everywhere as well.
I would agree with
you. Both Oliveiras, so even if you make a mistake on your DraftKings and play one that you didn't mean to play, like, oh, I played the wrong Oliveira, it's okay, they're both gonna win.
I totally see that. At 9,300 for 6,000 against 6,900 on DraftKings, Oliveira, big favorite on DraftKings, as well as the betting lines, -475. A lot of people see this. This is a squash match. Pregazzelli, decision against Brad Scott. Oliveira is so far above Brad Scott's level. I mean, squash match, you might see a dead body in there.
Then not for real.
Not a real dead body. You might see a limp body in there.
Not for real, Mom.
Then we go to the main event. We have a 205-pound bout with 185-pound fighters fighting on short notice. We talked about it a bit before on our last cast, but both of these fighters were already replacements, so two replacements are getting replaced by other replacements, and we got actually a better fight than any of those other ones. I like this fight so much better.
People that are wah-wahing about Manna Wah-Wah not being in there.
Dick Riders, that's it.
So?
That's it. But these 85ers, Thiago Santos versus Eric Anders. Anders coming in on 6 days' notice. That has to be a factor. You got to take that into account. Even at the 205 advantage, you ain't training for a camp.
How long was Santos in? Because his was kind of short notice.
His was more like 3 to 4 weeks.
Okay.
So he had a camp by way further. But we've seen with Santos, also gas tank not be up to par.
They're both,
They're both one-round fighters, essentially. Mm-hmm. That's why you gotta watch it, though. Because I think both of these actually...
Maybe not, though. At 205, they might not be as chinny. Not that Santos is chinny. Not that either guy's
chinny. Either guy's chinny, but they both throw with power. I would say the guy who backs off more out of the two, though, is Anders. And that tends to show up in Santos's fights because Santos hits so heavy that people tend to shell up against him.
I just have to say, you can't even possibly come close to skill level between Anders and Santos. I think Santos,
as far as striking, though,
I think this is way too big of a step up for Anders. I think
as far as striking wise, I think that on the ground or even in the takedowns, just not necessarily the submission, but I think Anders can take this fight down and just hold position for 5 rounds on top. Because Santos does have an exploitation in his takedown defense, especially when he starts to wear out.
Oh my God, I can't even imagine this going. If this goes 5 rounds, it'll be the most boring fight ever.
But that's what we say with these, where we're like, no way that freaking Bigfoot Silva versus Mark Hunt goes 5 rounds. No way that Ngannou versus Stipe goes 5 rounds. No way. And then what happens? One guy takes the other guy down because he's like, why would I get in there? You know...
I just don't think Anders has the skill set. I'm tentative on him having the skill set for UFC. I don't know if I'm into it. And I think Santos is one of the best guys in the 185. And so they're both fighting at 205. I just got to give it everywhere to Santos. I think Anders gets murked in there. I have KO like round one or two.
I have Santos KO round number two. But I want to be devil's advocate because it's not a squash match. This isn't a 500-1. To me, this is like -145 it should be for Santos is what I would bet it. I'd say he's a slight favorite, but it's because of that short notice more than anything. I think full training camp
even at 185. Even if they were full training camp, in my opinion, Santos is... when I made my pick on it, I didn't even play it like a short notice. I just thought, meh.
You still,
both skill set all the way around. Anders is only in there because he's an athlete. He's like a Brennan Schaub. He's an ex-football player.
That's
he knows
exactly
how to run through the thing. Other than that's nothing. That's different than a takedown in wrestling. That's different than a takedown in jiu-jitsu, being able to run into a, you know, coach on a sled.
So 8,600 for Maheta Santos against 7,600 against Anders. Betting lines, -155 favorite Thiago Santos against +135 Anders. I was right. I would say slight favorite. I would add that right about there for Santos. I do think, but I don't think it's like some of the other lines we're seeing where it's 400, 500, 600. Most of the other night is Brazilian, big favorite. Where here the Brazilian is there. A little bit.
I think if you see a finish and I see a finish, I think it could be a crazy
finish for Santos. Yeah. I'm going to probably play him. We got a couple guys in that 9,000 range earlier on in the night. It feels like we're going to end up playing some of those guys on the DK lines.
Yeah.
Who would you say is the underdog that you most feel comfortable with? We had a couple earlier
on
in
the night.
I want to
go with the Port St. Lucie girl, Robertson.
Robertson, Port Lucie, say Port St. Lucie's homegrown, Canada's own Roberts is going to be our
underdog
pick of the week.
Port St. Lucie.
She is Canada grown though.
Yeah, Canada grown, Port St. Canada born, Port St. Lucie bred.
All right, one more and then I'm going to leave it alone. Okay. All right, Canada grown, Port St. Lucie's own Jillia Roberts.
Is her name Jillia?
Jillian Roberts.
I like that one.
Almost. That one wasn't too bad.
I like
you,
that one.
We got though. You, girl. We backing you up here on the Treasure Coast.
Yeah, so if you watch us on the YouTube and you want to check out our podcast, you can get that wherever podcasts are grown. And if you listen to us audio, you don't even need to worry about ever checking out the YouTube. But if you want us on social media, we have Instagram and Twitter and Facebook, and just remember to look for Lesbo and the Bean and put the whole thing in there so you save someone from looking in your search history later on and you get in trouble. And we love you. Thanks for listening.
Lesbo and the Bean!
Thanks for listening to Lat B. For all things Lesbo and the Bean, head over to lesboandthebean.com or follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter.